Hello, everyone. My name is Doug Woodard, executive coach with Advisor Game Plan. Welcome to the Thriving Sports Podcast, our public podcast available to everyone. We do have two podcasts. Number one is a client-only private podcast called Thriving Coaches. And number two is this public podcast available to everyone. In this public podcast, in each episode, we'll be talking to a successful coach or leader about specific ways they enhance their team's culture and player development, as well as many other valuable topics.
And I'm Brian Willett, founder and CEO of Advisor Game Plan. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to sit back and learn from each of these episodes with these amazing coaches. Thank you for joining us as we dive deeper into these areas that can lift a team from average to good to great.
Thriving Sports audience, welcome. Fortunate day to be joined by Coach Chris Crutchfield, Omaha University. Coach Crutchfield, wife Jody, three boys, I believe, Derek, Jalen, and Josh. After playing at this very university, at the time UNO, which I'm much more comfortable, I'll confess that, saying, played both football and basketball here, coached at Texas San Antonio, head coach at Tyler Community College, assisted at New Mexico State, TCU, Oral Roberts, head assistant to Lon Kruger, great coach at Oklahoma, associate head coach at, I believe, Arkansas, East Central Oklahoma, finally assistant to our own Omaha's own, or I guess we claim him, Dana Altman at Oregon. I guess we could say, Coach, you've served your dues duly over the years. That's an incredible, but what a testament to persistence and showing up and getting the job done and to finally get this opportunity. And we'll go into that a little bit more. Coach, talk for a minute, if you would, just about the family, what your three boys are doing maybe, and how they've all adjusted to all these moves and everything over the years.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Coach, for having me on your podcast. First of all, Jody has been a soldier. My wife, Jody, we've been married almost 34 years now.
Got to have that. That's
and she's from Omaha, born and raised in Omaha. I met her here when I was in college. And we started this coaching journey together. And she's been with me every step of the way, and kind of like my assistant coach slash she's really the head coach. So it's been fun because we kind of grown in the business together. And she's a teacher by trade, became a speech therapist probably 30 years ago after she taught in the classroom for about 4 or 5 years. So her job matches what my job is when it's time to move.
Sure.
So three boys. Derek is older. Then Jalen here. He lives here in Omaha, works for Leo A. Daily, engineering firm. And Josh, my youngest, is on our staff as our director of player personnel, assistant coach. So,
and how's that? That's got to be awesome, coming to work with your son on a day.
It's been fun. It's been fun because he didn't know he wanted to coach. He spent 2 years working for Trey Young and Trey Young Enterprises and traveling around the world with Trey and kind of handling a lot of his personal obligations. And it got to a point where he just said, "Dad, I don't know how long I can do this, and I want to get into coaching." And we had an opportunity here, and we brought him in. And the first year we go to the NCAA tournament, he comes in. He reminded me.
Is he claiming that?
He's reminding me of that every day. You didn't go to the tournament until I got here. So it's been fun, though. It's been fun watching him learn, watching him grow, because he has a lot of energy, and the players are really, really has gravitated to him because he has that kind of personality.
Awesome. And you need that. You need that connection with call them the kids, I guess, and the players.
No doubt.
And what a neat opportunity for him, though. Coach, could you talk a little bit about your journey, I guess, to becoming a head coach? And we kind of went through that.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple things you learned along the way that you feel were critical in developing your ability to manage a program and with all the stuff going on in managing a program today.
Well, I got lucky because, I was here as a GA, and then Tim Carter took me to Texas San Antonio with him for a year. And then I moved to Tyler Junior College because I needed to get some recruiting experience. And I had no recruiting experience up to that point. So I took an assistant job at Tyler Junior College for 2 years. And then I became the head coach. Our head coach took a job at Oklahoma State. Then I got the head coaching job at Tyler at the age of 29. You know, so I had no idea what I was doing. But luckily, at junior college, you can make a lot of mistakes and nobody knows.
Right.
So, and it was a fun experience having the opportunity to be a head coach. I learned a lot about myself, and I also learned some things about being a head coach that I had no idea. But I left that job in 2 years and went to work for Lou Henson at New Mexico State. And that's the legendary, late, great Lou Henson. And that's probably was the best learning situation I ever had, being around him. He was on the back end of his career at that time. So, but he was still sharp, and he still knew basketball. And he was one of those guys, and you know, he could walk in a room and just win the room over. I mean, he was like the politician, and everybody loved him. He could go in a room and tell stories and joke and laugh, but he knew basketball and he cared about the kids. And I spent 4 years with Lou, and I probably learned a lot about coaching there. And some of the things I do now, I still go back and look at some of the stuff that we did at New Mexico State. But long journey, a lot of moves, man. And I think the biggest one was I think getting to Oklahoma from Oral Roberts. Spent 4 years at Oral Roberts, then going with Lon. Mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, I really, really decided I want to be a Division I head coach. You know, I want that opportunity. So 8 years, we had a lot of success at Oklahoma, coached a lot of guys that are playing in the NBA still today.
Including Trey.
And to be honest with you, and I don't mind telling people this, you know, I probably got a little agitated because I thought after 8 years with Lon, I would have had an opportunity to be a head coach at the Division I school. So it wasn't nothing against Lon. It was just the timing. And so I left. And I always like to tell people that God took me on a detour, a humbling detour. So I left Oklahoma after 8 years with Lon, after Sweet 16, Final Four runs. We probably had three first-round draft picks in that short period of time. But I left and went to Arkansas because I thought I needed to be around another person that could move me in the direction of being a head coach, right? That turned into a one-year stay at Arkansas. Then I took a head job at East Central during COVID and coached both of my boys, and that was the fun deal. But then after that, Dan Altman called, and I go to Oregon. So I moved my family 4 years in a row, right? And that's why I call it God took me on a detour to get me back here at my first Division I head coaching job. And I truly believe if I had just been patient and stayed at Oklahoma, this same opportunity would have came.
Sure.
And I just wasn't patient. But you learn through this process of coaching and moving and putting stock in people. But I also forgot to put stock in and realized that I had a plan, but God's plan was better than my plan.
Absolutely. And that, you know, we tell the kids all the time that this game will humble you, and it will if you play long enough.
It will.
If it's best to approach everything, I always tell kids, you want to get too high and get too on yourself, something's going to happen really soon to humble you in front of maybe a lot of people. the game can humble us as coaches too, but sometimes that's the key to us rising to greater heights.
No doubt.
As players or coaches.
No doubt. I truly believe that. You have to go through those tough trials and tribulations to have a testimony that you can share with other coaches and your players.
Absolutely. Coach, here at Thriving, Coach, we have we call collaboration, mm-hmm. which means to engage team members. For us, engage team members and seeking the best way. And your guys' mantra, I think, for 24, 25, what a year that was No blaming, no complaining, no excuses, which I think talks a lot about collaboration. You have to, if you're going to, you can't collaborate if it's always the other guy's fault.
No doubt.
Or if you're always saying, coach should have done this, or the refs did this, or my teammate didn't hit me when, you know, you can't collaborate. What things were part, I guess, or did you have intentional things that were part of a daily routine, both within practice and even outside of practice, just in life together, that helped foster that environment that was so observable from the outside for you guys last year?
Well, we started the mantra of no blaming, no complaining, no excuses day one when we first got here. And that was our way of trying to start the culture of one, players taking accountability with no blaming, right? We wanted everyone to be accountable for your actions and what happened along the way, right? So we were trying to teach accountability as part of our culture when we started. The no complaining is part of, we're building something special here, and it's going to be hard. And there's not going to be room to complain. We have to make mistakes and move on and keep moving. So that's where the no complaining came in. We didn't want to make excuses. We wanted to make sure guys understood that, like, this is on me. Let's go. And the last part was no excuses. If you're building something great, is it really going to be a partnership and a collaboration, right? You can't make excuses, because when you do that, you don't allow yourself to improve, or you don't allow yourself to grow. And we was big about the program growing and the program getting better every single day, every single week, every single month. And we got to year three and we stayed with it. We stayed with that whole mantra of no blaming, no complaining, no excuses. We put it on T-shirts. It's in our locker room. It's on the walls. It's everywhere we go. And now our guys know it by heart, but you never hear a guy point the finger at anyone else. You never hear a guy not take accountability for what has happened. And our coaching staff believe it. And I think that's helped us get over all the hurdles that we had to get over to be a conference champion, to make it to the NCAA tournament.
Well, and it was so observable and obvious that there was a special culture being built. It didn't come without having to fight some losses at the beginning of the year. And you had some, you know, those are times where stuff can go either way, maybe. And so it's a testimony to you and the coaches and the kids that you were able to persevere and keep that mindset, even in the midst of what to the outside would have looked like a real rough patch, maybe towards the beginning of the year, to then go on that magical run, which was for those of us that have been around Omaha for a lot of years, it just was a lot of fun to watch and observe. But a lot of credit, and again, but it didn't come easy. You had to fight to get it.
No, it started from day one, from the first day I stepped in this office. Like we knew we could get it turned. That's why I took the job. We knew we could do it. We had to make some changes. You know, we had to make some changes to personnel. And one thing Lon would tell me all the time, if you want to change a culture, you have to change the people. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. Slowly but surely, we had to change the people who was thinking the way our staff was thinking. That was thinking positive things about Omaha, was thinking positive things about this university, and thinking positive things about what this program could become. And we just started recruiting positive guys that had energy, guys that had a competitive spirit, not just about basketball, but a competitive spirit about life. And that carries over into everything that you do if you're a competitor. So we just was real diligent in the guys we took into our program. Then once we got the guys that we needed and wanted, our biggest message every single day was, everyone has value. Every player in this room has value, even the managers. Everyone has value into what we're doing. You talk about collaboration. We got them to buy into that. Now, everybody's roles were different.
Sure.
Their responsibilities are different, but the value is the same. You know, we sit in this room, everybody got a same amount of value into what they're bringing to the table. And we got them to believe in that. We got them to buy into each other. We got them to be servers to each other. And the rest of it is you're probably going to win your fair share of games if you have a group that's connected and have great chemistry. And I thought this year's team, I tell people all the time, that was our superpower, that we was more connected than every team in our league that we played against. And that's what they won us 13 games in a conference championship.
Absolutely. And again, it was so evident to see. But again, that's rare. And if you go around this country and talk to coaches, I think it's very rare to be able to get a group and sustain a group to have that mentality where maybe the 10th man, the 11th man, the 12th person, whatever they would be on the team, would see themselves as having value, and their teammates would see them as having value. It's not, the value isn't obviously maybe in their game day contributions, but it's just as critical to the development of a team, and getting guys anymore to see that is a very difficult thing in the world we live in right now.
No doubt.
Coach, we talk about team spirit being the willingness to sacrifice. You were talking a little bit about this, but the willingness to sacrifice personal ambition and self-interest mm-hmm. for the good of the team. Omaha exemplified this and showed this by the whole trash can saga. We joked about that coming in early, but it kind of got obviously gripped the basketball world around the country. But what was so unique was that the joy was shared by the whole team, no matter who the quote hero was in a particular game. And it was different people at different times. Again, how did, and you've spoke a little bit about it, but just talk a little bit about that whole deal and, mm-hmm. and how that kind of exemplified cultivating the culture you've talked about.
And it's funny because it happened very organically. We didn't plan it and the way it happened, but it drew our team closer together. And even when we was going through those tough times when we was 4-9 in a non-con, I mean, our guys were still competing. They were still together. They were still working hard every single day. But I kept telling them, just stay with it, guys. We're a good basketball team. Just stay with it. Just keep doing what you're doing. It doesn't matter sometimes in the non-con at this level. When we get into conference play is when it's really going to matter. So we're building to start playing our best basketball in January. And that's what kind of happened. So our team was connected already. We was connected. No one gave up. No one stopped working. We just couldn't put the wins on the right column at that time. But I think going up to North Dakota, their first road games of the conference play, went up to Grand Forks and Fargo, which is the toughest trips to make in our league.
Like, for a lot of reasons.
People hate that trip. And it's cold and it's ugly. You think you're in Russia. And we go up and we beat North Dakota in the first game convincingly. And we jump on the bus and drive down to Fargo. And that's always been a tough place for us to play. And we're down 14 with about 6 or 7 minutes to play. Lance Waters, a young man who's transferred from North Dakota State to our program, he jumps up and hit 5 threes in a row. Consecutive possession, he hits 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Momentum shifts. We're back in the game. It's 3 minutes to play now. We got a 4-point lead. And that's how the game changed right there. But that moment changed our team.
Sure.
And Lance was coming off the bench and was struggling at that time as a player. We started him earlier. He went to the bench, came off the bench, was struggling. That game, he jumps up and win the game for us. That brought our team closer together. So we win both of those games on that road trip. The garbage can started then, to be honest with you. And I think what happens when guys have success like Lance had that particular game, like after the garbage can deal, like, it just, everybody was happy for just for the team. It didn't matter who got the most rebounds. It didn't matter who got the most points. They were so excited to celebrate with the garbage can. It didn't matter who scored the points. All they wanted to do was win. And that became the whole topic of conversation was, if we're going to celebrate, what's going to happen next? What kind of celebration will it be? But you have to win to get the celebration. And they got excited about that more than individual play.
Well, just the testimony of persistence, staying ready, staying available when Lance obviously was struggling. Probably, I mean, human nature is to get down.
No doubt.
To lose confidence. Mm-hmm. But he stayed ready. And the moment you guys really needed him, which was kind of indicative of the whole season, you needed somebody. That night it was Lance. And then that began that magical run that was so much fun for everybody to watch.
No doubt. We won 16 of our last 19 games.
Wow. That is a tough, tough conference to do that in. There's a lot of tough places to play. That is really good basketball. I mean, people
Thank you.
That don't watch the basketball enough to see the and I think you can see by the number of people that have left with the transfer portal being what it is and have gone on to different places to have tremendous success, it's indicative. There's a lot of good players at that level.
And I tell people all the time, especially in our league, the Summit, I can't give you a number. I'll probably be off by two or three, but there's been almost 13 players in our 3 years here that have left the Summit to go to higher level to play basketball. And they all have had success. So that tells you a testament of how good this league really is and how good it's continued to be when guys leave and new guys come in, and there has never been a drop-off in our league in the competitive competition every year in, year out for the last 3 years.
No, and I tell people all the time, I'm getting off track here a little bit, but for those of you that coach at what people would say the mid-market or the mid-major level, how difficult it is now, because it's almost a dichotomy. You have to develop good players, because if you don't, you're going to end up getting fired. Because if you don't develop good players, you're not going to win. So at any level, that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
But if you develop good players, and they get really good, they're probably going to be gone by their junior or senior year. And so you got to start that process over again. So all the respect in the world for the ability to stay at it, but I think, somebody that has your heart, that has the young man's best interest at heart, understands that. And if it's time to for him to move on, I know you wish they would stay, but you'd support them wherever it is they're going.
No doubt. And we're kind of changed the MO on this whole transfer thing. Like, we're promoting it. We're promoting young people that want to come to our program for 2 years and develop and increase their stats and have opportunity to grow their brand and to move on to a higher level and obviously make more NIL money. So we're okay with that. Like, we're selling that to some of our high school recruits. If you come in here and have 2 great years of success, that probably means our program had 2 years of great success. So we're promoting it. We're promoting it. And we started with Frankie, and we're promoting that. And he went to Michigan State. Now you got Markel Sutton at LSU and J.J. White, who's at Baylor. So there's going to be another one next year. We're pretty sure it's going to happen again. It's going to continue to happen. But we've accepted that. And instead of turning it into a negative, we turned it into a positive.
That's, again, the kind of mindset, instead of being bitter, embrace it and make the best of it.
No doubt.
The same thing you ask the players to do, and you coaches are doing. So you're living the thing that you're asking them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, finally, can we talk just a little bit about, or have you talked just a little bit about the 25-26 Mav team? I know you've had some time, and I think one more day maybe of being together with them this summer. What excites you about this group?
Well, first of all, I think we're returning, you know, 9 guys that was on that team last year that went to the NCAA tournament. Now, all of them didn't play. 7 of them played. But we're returning 9 guys that understood what it took every single practice, every single road trip. They knew what the games was like. So,
and they know your culture.
No doubt. They know the culture and are driving it right now. So that's really, really big. We added 5 new players, 4 transfers and 1 high school kid. And the kids that we added, 3 of them are 2 juniors and 2 seniors in the transfer market and 1 freshman. So we stayed old. We got 8 seniors on this year's team, 2 juniors, and the rest of them all underclassmen. So I like the fact that we're older, we're experienced, we're mature. Our practices this summer have been so smooth. You know, the 8 weeks that we got, 4 in June, 4 in July, they went really, really smooth. No hiccups at all. Guys know where to be. Guys know what to do. The new guys are falling in line. We're talented. We picked up some size. We got a 7'1" kid, transferred from Long Beach, Chris Richardson. He's going to play along with Isaac Onakande, who was with our program last year. So we're turning 3 starters, and Isaac and Tony Osborne, along with Cameron Thomas, all those guys started every conference game for us. And we came off the bench with Lance Waters and Jay Sean Glover. So, and we got Grant Stubblefield back. So we got 6 guys that play a lot of minutes for us in conference games. So I feel good about that. We have experience. We got guys that know what's going to happen. We took those transfers, a kid by the name of Julian Margrave from South Alabama. He's a pick and pop 4 man who's 6'10". A kid by the name of Dane Mayar, who transferred in conference from North Dakota. He's been brilliant all summer. You know, had his first bad day today out of 7.5 weeks. He's been unbelievable. So we got depth, we got size, we got guard play, we got experience. I like where we're at. We're just going to continue to build and try to do this thing all over again.
And keep the same same team cohesion and identity and foster that. And I know the city's excited and looking forward to see another year, and just wish you the best, Coach. And it's great to have you back in town. You've brought a lot of good to Omaha and to Omaha University. So thank you for taking the time today, and I just wish you the best.
Thank you for having me on, Coach. And I'm always proud to represent my school. I always tell people it's not University of Nebraska. This is my school, and I wouldn't be in the position that I am today if it wasn't for this university and this city. So it's an honor to be able to give something back. So thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you, Coach.
We have free resources available on advisorgameplan.com. If you would like to gain access to our full version of client resources, please contact us today on advisorgameplan.com to explore becoming a client. Also, subscribe today to Thriving Sports and stay up to date with future episodes and more interviews with more coaches. Together, let's be thriving coaches that put the player first in all situations. See ya!